hey, Luke, how you doing?
We chatted for a few minutes beforehand, so because we're going to come in hot.
We're coming in hot, which is how Shannon
as likes hot it. As two men in their early 40s can.
Yeah, which means with a lot of Ben Gay and some naps.
My back is cramping for some reason.
Ow, I sat wrong. Oh, I hate getting older. No, I was just...
Shannon, how do you do it?
How does she do it so gracefully?
We should have a segment called Shannon Guides Luke Through Old Age.
Sponsored by AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons. No, I was taking a nap and I had just fallen asleep. And I had this dream. It was semi-lucid. Like I was aware that I was dreaming. And I was some character in a mythological thing, but it was also a movie set.
How happy were you?
Oh, so happy. It was also like a movie set thing. And so I don't remember, but I knew the scene that I was a part of. And it was a part where I go into the ocean and then the muses come out to kill me. And then I started to freak out and I woke up going, ah! And I was like kicking my little arms and legs. And I was like, wow. And then I looked at my watch and it had been like 3 minutes since I had fallen asleep. So I was like, oh, that spike of adrenaline that's going through me right now is not going to be conducive to get a nap in before catching fox.
Oh, the worst, man.
Yeah.
The other day I fell asleep and I woke up at 4 and I just was thinking about my new job and some stuff related to it. And I just could not fall back asleep. So I was up for another hour. And then this is when I turned on YouTube and started just to watch YouTube commentary on The Lord of the Rings and then Game of Thrones. And then will George R. R. Martin ever finish? And I was like, wait, I gave all this up for Lent.
I was just about to say, wait a second.
But I was just trying to I just got to do something. Cause my brain just was like, it was, I think part of it was a little bit weird just because I've been so, if you guys can't tell by the sound of my voice, I've been so sick. Yuluki's been so sick. And I've been trying to sleep when I can, and it's really messed up my sleeping schedule. And so I think my body was just kind of like, listen, I don't know what's happening. Like I woke up on Sunday and I genuinely thought it was Monday. Like I was like acting like it was, I mean, part of that too is just like having, you know, when you start to search for a job and you're doing Instacart to eat, which sounds way more sad than it actually is, time just kind of becomes a weird thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But you have a job.
Yeah. Everyone. Yes. I got a job. So I'm starting a new job on Monday. I'm very excited about it. It's been kind of a bummer just being sick. I haven't told anyone because I've been so like, you know,
bleh. Yeah, and you'll be helping homeless youths, so that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't know if I can say who it is and stuff. I haven't talked about the podcast at all, which is weird.
You're like, hey, I'm kind of a big deal on the interwebs, so... Yeah.
Within Catholic young adults, most of them have heard of me or have a friend who has. Huh? Huh? And they're like, sir, all we know is Mark Wahlberg. Yeah. Like, okay,
fair enough. And Donnie.
Drug free. Man, if there's anything, there's a lot about the past 18 to 24 months that have been very hard. But if there's anything that just really kills me, it's been the fact that when Mark Wahlberg started like doing interviews more with Catholic outfits, I was on my break. Because you have no idea how badly I would want to have him on the show and be like, listen, I'm not going to ask you about anything besides the Father Stu film and the Marky Mark stuff. That's all I want to talk about. If we can talk about those two things, I'll be very thrilled. Listen, I won't even bring up Planet of the Apes. I won't bring up The Departed. I won't bring up anything. We don't even have to talk about
The Departed is incredible.
Yeah, whatever. I want to talk about Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Okay.
That's all I want to talk about.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, that's literally all I want to talk about.
And then I'm in the background holding up a sign that says, can we please address your Transformers movie?
I'm like, no. This is it.
Okay. Okay. I'll put that down.
Can I tell you about a movie I saw that I really enjoyed? I think you would like it too. Actually, there's a film called Blackberry.
About the Blackberry.
It's phenomenal.
Every time I get
phenomenal.
I hear it's great. Every time I get on the airplane that is the thing that's recommended over and over and over again.
It's probably one of those things where, like, as an airplane film, it's completely fine. You know, it would work. But I think I would recommend a film that's kind of like the same, like, here's how it was made, or here's the story of this brand. Which is, to be honest, like, I love those type of movies. I love the, like, here's how this was made, or here's how this thing happened. Here's how they did it. So I actually think this film was made. So it's by a director named Matt Johnson, this is his third film. His first two were very weird. He's Canadian. And I've seen his first two films. I kind of want to now. And I think the way that it was shot, it's made to feel almost like a documentary, but not exactly like you are watching one, but one that's like you're as if you are, like, I'm seeing it all happen. That's kind of the point. But they also take some pretty big liberties with the film as well, which is very intentional on their part. They're trying to tell, like, the gist of the story in a artistic way, a la like a Braveheart or on the something. And there's a scene in this film that caused me, had not been feeling very, very sick, to jump off of the couch that I was lying down on. It was so great. And I burst out loud laughing at what they were doing. And it's a brilliant, I don't know if it's a commentary as on, you know, say 90s pop stuff, like people our age, as much as it is just like, they're trying to celebrate the stuff that these guys enjoyed when they were that age, or like when they were like the kind of like weird, quirky, like 90s stuff, or weird, quirky, like 90s nerds, the things that they liked. It's almost like celebrating that. And it was so brilliant the way that they did it. Nice. And I just was like, that's, I don't want to give it away per se. I don't know.
Don't give it away, because I do want to see that. I do want to see it.
Yeah. It, like, it's a minor thing, but when you see it, I think you'll get it.
Yeah.
It'll be like, and why, and it's just like the way it's shot, like these cameras that they used, they wanted to make it feel again as if like this was a documentary. And so like they use a lot of like long shot lenses, particularly when they're doing like later stages of the company them. So it's a story of the company that created the BlackBerry phone, and it's really fascinating. And then by the end of the film, it's a lot of like long lens shots, because it's to give the idea that they're not as close as they once were, because now they're this big corporate like behemoth, as opposed to this small, weird, quirky, weird like nerd startup. And with all of your like Merlin Mannish stuff, your like tech love and your love for kind of that world, I think you'll really enjoy a lot of this.
Well, I watched the preview endlessly when you're sitting on a plane waiting to back out, you know, and they're just showing on the built-in TV screens. And instead, I watched the Flash, you know, the Flash movie, and I just skipped to the end scene with the fighting of Supergirl in and all that, and General Zod and all that stuff. But
yeah,
I saw that preview so many times, and that's exactly what it was like. Oh, man, this is like early 2000s nerddom for me. This is like the stuff when the BlackBerry was so popular. It was right at the edge where they were making the Clio and the Springboard, which were like handheld personal digital assistants that the iPhone just stole. Like, that's what it is, but as a phone. And I remember Father David Huss, back when he was back, probably when you were living with him, he had one of those. No, it was a Father David or yeah, it was Father David and Jonathan had those type of phones, and they could, and it had a little IR transmitter, and they could take over like any TV. Like, so we'd be at a sports bar and he's like, I'm done with this, and he would change the channel.
I remember Father David's big gray phone.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
It was like a Sony version of the Clio or what. I can't remember all these names, but they're so funny. My daughter has a Nokia flip phone, and it's so funny because it's like, oh man, this is the operating system that I use. Like, this is the software that was on the phone. You know, it's a little bit newer and stuff, but
yeah,
back when I had this similar phone, you know,
Well, it was, you know, it's weird. I think that we're kind of the weird age as it relates to the BlackBerry, because we were all very aware of what they were.
Yeah.
But not a lot of us could afford them or had really had like a reach, because we're
just to be like 10 years in the workforce. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, so some people got them because of their jobs or because their parents had money or, you know, or whatever. and they were able to afford it. And they weren't like crazy expensive, but I remember like wanting one.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I can't, you know, I can't. Oh my gosh. My first phone bill was $400. Isn't that crazy? It was the minutes. I don't know how I went over, but somehow I did. I don't know how I paid that, but anyways.
That's funny.
But I never got one. I think as soon as they announced the iPhone, I was like, oh, never mind. And I just was like, that's what I want. And I mean, we were both, I would say, I mean, the iPhone sold like crazy, but it wasn't, you know, till like another 5 years or so that it was everywhere. Like everyone had one.
Right. The first one was more proof of concept in 2006. And it was
2007.
I told people, yeah, I mean, it was intro'd in 2006, but
Gilmer,
I told, I told people like, I'm not going to get it until it has 3G wireless.
Ooh,
not that edge network. So I had to wait for the third version. And
I first got it during the third version.
Yeah. And I remember getting it. The first person that I knew that had it was Matt Maher. And I was at an event that he was at, and he had taken some photos, and I was like, dude, is that the iPhone? Cause I could tell from the back, cause they used to have a metal back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is that the iPhone? And he's like, it is. He's like, you're a nerd. And he's like, you'll love this. And he's like showing me pinch to zoom. And I'm like, the future is now. He's pinching to zoom.
Yeah, I remember. It's so funny that it was Matt Maher was the first guy he saw that had it. Because for me, it was Dan Bozek.
Oh, yeah.
If people who don't know, Dan Bozek is a phenomenal musician and a producer. I think he's producing stuff now. And he does a lot of stuff with the Steubenville conference in terms of like they're on the sound and playing in the bands. And I'm sure he's probably played in like a Matt Maher band at some point in time. I was like, oh, and I saw him going on to, he was going on to a website. I was like, okay, that's cool. Like, that's really, really cool. And then the whole, like, what was so interesting about it was it wasn't what it could do. It's what was coming.
Yeah.
Like, because I remember I remember him saying like, there's an app store, you can't get a lot, but eventually they're going to like open this up.
Yeah.
And then like the floodgates are going to like, terms of like what you can do with it and stuff. And yeah. That was very, and so it was just fun to be like reminded of that time and how it's also crazy how like just how dated they look and old and like they looked stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. But they like, really, that, they really do. The iPhone with the all everything as one screen, like everyone knew, oh, that's the future. And you know who else knew? It was Google, who after Apple released their iPhone, what's his name? Eric sat on the board.
Eric Schmidt.
Yeah, that? Eric Schmidt, who was the CEO of Google, sat on the board of Apple because they were all really chummy.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. And then the G phone or the G1, whatever it was called, its immediate iteration, which I think was a T-Mobile exclusive, looked like the iPhone. And that's when they broke complete ties. They were like, you're just blatant ripoff, because the original G phone was a ripoff of the BlackBerry. It had a physical keyboard on the bottom and it had a screen on the top, and it was a half and half kind of phone. Yeah. And then the iPhone came out, and like everyone instantly knew that's the future.
I remember. Well, let me back up a bit. I've been listening to a podcast called Acquired, which I think you'd really like it, Gomer. They basically tell the history of a particular business, but it's more about their strategic playbook and how that like it developed or came about throughout their history. And I'm listened to two episodes on Amazon, and it was so much fun to like think back to like those days of particularly like the like early to late aughts when everything was just so new and so exciting.
Yeah.
And I remember like I just forgot like how much Amazon developed from when we were in college. I remember hearing, I think I probably bought a book or a thing off of Amazon either in high school, and then beginning part of college, Amazon was a little bit expensive for books, but you could still go and get books there. By the end, I got a lot of my books from Amazon or eBay. And then I kind of like stopped using it until like around 2008, 2009 when they got music. And then I started to buy a lot more stuff, and Prime, I think, begins around then. And it was like, that's right. This was all like really, and then they were talking about the Kindle, which was actually the first iteration of what a Kindle-esque thing that was brought to Amazon was by the guys that started Tesla. Actually.
Yep.
So there hasn't really been anything like that time. Okay. Think about where tech was in 2010. Sorry. In the year 2000.
In the year 2000.
Then think about, I can't go that high.
I know. Your voice immediately was like, nope, you should cough now.
Yeah. To where it was in 2010. You know, by the time we get to 2010, we're on like, what, iPhone 5 almost?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. iPhone 4 is in 2010, right? That's like the big debacle one where they, like, one was stolen. And, yeah, there was the antenna issue.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
The guy left
it. He was a Gizmodo writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the guy, like, stole it. That guy, like, who stole it works for Apple now.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I could, only reason why I know that is because I was listening to an old episode of the Nerdist podcast. While I was trying to listen to an old podcast. I was like, I'd love to hear an old, like, they had a Nerdist episode after WWDC or whatever. Or it was after some, I think it was an Apple event. Sorry, not WWDC. Like, it was an Apple event, and it was Chris Hardwick and two tech guys, not the other two guys. And they were just, like, talking about the new Apple stuff. I was like, oh, it'd be kind of fun to hear now. And I got bored after about 20 minutes, but that guy was on that. So I went and saw his, I went on his, who found the phone stuff. I went and found his LinkedIn page to see what he was doing now. I'm like, he works for Apple now.
Interesting.
So yeah, but like, I'm just like, I didn't realize how special that was. Mm-hmm. That whole period of just like, and why don't we even go from 2005 to say 20, I'm a 15 to kind of put like a little bit more of like a broader range.
Yeah, like, I mean, you think about it, that's the era of personal communication, right? So you have the 90s and the 2000s of the internet and the foundations of the internet being laid, and then taking over from there, 2005, 2006, 2007 to, I mean, obviously till today, but now it feels like cell phone technology is normal. That's become normal. It's become 100%, you know, I love the great line from one of the oh, I can't remember who it was. I and something. There's a these Christian comedians on YouTube, and it was, quit calling your cell phone a cell phone. It's called a phone. That's just what it is. No one owns any other kind of phone. It's just a phone. Don't say call my cell. Just say call my phone, right? And I was like, when I saw that commercial or that joking little parody thing, I was like, oh, dude, that is funny. Like, it is now the phone. It's not there's no hyphen, there's no qualifier. And it's so fascinating that you don't call a home, you don't call a business, you call a cell phone, meaning the personal communication. And then everything around it shifts from the home to the person. And that's what we're looking at with Apple's like latest Vision Pro is like, now it's the person almost, and Apple's trying to walk the line between isolation and environment and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely a one gen product. And there's so many things that are amazing about it. So many things are terrible about it. But the idea of how personal is it going to get before I'm in my own little world? And that's what the Vision Pro kind of feels like it's in danger of doing.
It's interesting, too. I saw this really, I can't remember where I saw this quote, but there were like two things about the internet that I've really, and I was like hesitant to bring this up because I didn't want to turn this into like us talking about technique or the dangers of like social media or any of that. So I'm going to try to thread this needle here. Get ready, everyone. It's going to go poorly. How basically like the internet, like if you take a look at like take a look at your malls pre and post the internet or like early internet malls are filled with stores and people doing stuff. Now they're all completely empty. And that before back in the day, the internet was like a mirror to, or it was like a reflection of real life. And now real life is a reflection of the internet.
Yeah.
And just how much, like how unexciting everything with that involves the internet now is. Things like Chat GPT or even Apple's, Apple's Vision Pro. You know, anytime there was a new iPhone being announced, it was like, it almost had like this almost like messianic complex to it of like, this is going to change everything about our world. Life is better now.
Yep.
And there was this weird excitement that dumbasses like us kind of had about it.
Yeah.
I
camped outside for a buddy to get a new iPhone. Turns out you could just reserve it in the store by that point.
Yeah. Like, and now there's this little bit of like, I just don't see that same old, like, that same old, that same old enthusiasm, but it's almost as if it's too late to get back. I'm like, there's no reason to, like, all the old stuff just looks boring and dull now, and all of the new stuff is just incremental change almost, even though like that's what it feels like, even though it's like, if you look at what Chat GPT can do, it's pretty radical.
Yeah.
And I actually think there's some like positives about it as it relates to our experience of the internet. But then there's also some like horrific other side to it as well that I think vastly outweighs all the benefits, but neither here nor there. And so I don't know if I'm kind of like, what do we do with that? Is there going to be just this sort of like, not abandoning of the internet, but kind of just this sort of like,
okay. This is the shift into ubiquity, right? This is, you know, it's like cable television. Imagine if I took away all cable and all satellite, everyone would be pissed. Oh, I got the 8 channels of your antenna and that's it. So this is the internet coming of age. This is the maturity stage. The maturity stage is where the technology and the whiz bang falls into the background. And then what is built upon it is the thing that drives our attention. Right. So like phones. Now it's, you know, it's not about, so it's about the phone, it's about the cameras, it's about the communications device, blah, blah, blah. That gets leveled up. Now we're just at the iterative stage. We just want Apple to make better still photography, better night photography, better 4K video, higher frame rate, better slow-mo, whatever. But then on top of that now, the exciting part is now you can have a career as a YouTuber using just your phone, which you already have anyway. You don't have to buy 4K cameras and, you know, all of this stuff. To me, I think that's where the next step or that's where the exciting part is the new careers, the new industries, the new ways of life that emerge from, you know, so obviously you have Web 2.0, you have the rise of social media. That's a big deal, right? We all rode that wave. But now you're seeing, okay, so maybe there's a backlash against social media, there's this, there's that. But then there can be, to me, it's like, okay, now how can we get, once it stops being whiz bang, that's for the kids. Like, I think of YouTube, the number one search engine in the world is Google. The number two search engine in the world is YouTube. People use YouTube like they use the internet. That used to be Facebook. I was talking to my wife about this. Facebook, I don't know if you remember this, but back during the CrackBerry days, Facebook, when cell phones were...
Are you proud of yourself for that one?
I am, because I was watching an old show, and this lady's like, I call it my CrackBerry. And I was like, what year is this show? I don't know if you remember this, but like Facebook used to sell internet access for free if you bought cell phones, and what they were giving people was Facebook. So in like third world countries. So all these people had free Facebook. They had unlimited Facebook on their phones. And it was part of the carrier deals that they would make in Africa and Asia. So there were people who had no idea what the internet was outside of Facebook. Like, in a certain sense, YouTube, like, it's kind of like Reddit. Like, there are people who love Reddit, like you, where Reddit becomes its own world unto itself. Well, that's like YouTube. YouTube is becoming its own world unto itself. So not only do you have, you're going to have everything that's on the internet for the last 20 years is going to also be on YouTube, but in video form in all of its ways. Just like in Reddit, it's mostly text and pictures. Like, and that's the interesting thing, how careers and industries, I think, will be made or affected or destroyed by what is built upon the ubiquity of high definition, always on, you know, phones.
Yeah. So one of the things that Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, talked about was like Amazon was a day one internet company.
Yeah.
So like they're just starting. This is just day one of what the internet is. And he's never actually said if they're on the day two or not. And what, but it's funny, like what's, and it's definitely a gimmick, but there's some interesting, I don't know if truth is the right word, but it does make you think about the internet in a much broader long-term context, and you talking about that stuff does make me think a little bit about day two, that now the tech stuff is in the background, how to do all the apps. Now you don't need to know how to code. You just need to know, I need to have an idea, and chat GPT or like AI can make the code for you.
Yeah.
Or all this stuff. And what I think concerns me about that is I think what you're talking about in terms of that content creation stuff, the people like, I feel like we're already past that or at the tail end of that.
Well,
that's in the last 10 years. And like what a concern, let me just add this and then I'll be done. Is that when you look at YouTube, thinking back to like when we talked about on YouTube a couple of weeks ago, people were talking there about the increase of the haves and the have nots, right? When you look at how I talked about Porter's 5 points about how competitive podcasts actually, how competitive podcasting actually is and how insane, like, lucky we are to even be able to have, you know, way more than a couple hundred people who are right. listening to this. It is just beyond insane how hard it is now to actually make money off of that, that stuff. And I think the days of your smaller of it being like what it's not going to exist. A lot of it are going to be us. It's going to be either you're going to have like Mr. Beast, you'll have people who are gigantic or people who, you know, are able to make a, you know, ton of money, and you will have people who are barely doing anything.
Yeah.
I just don't see a lot of space in there right now for, because of technology, for the middleman. Hey guys, what's up? This is Luke. I apologize for the bad audio. I am doing this on my headphones because my mic is broken. Yay. Okay. But I'm here, one, to get paid, but then two, actually, this is more important to me, to talk about these Steubenville conferences. If you've been listening to this podcast at all for any long period of time, which is all of you, you know how important these conferences are to me. What they have on the episode with my mom, talked about how she met my dad at a Steubenville conference. You've heard me talk about how it played a huge role in my conversion. Gomer obviously speaks at them. And okay, so the Steubenville conferences are where teens go to experience a life-changing encounter with Jesus Christ. There are 3 days of amazing speakers and opportunities for powerful worship, adoration, and confession with hundreds of other teens. And they're honestly some of the best youth conferences in the country, in my opinion. I love them. I think they're great. They're very important. And I really, if you have some teenagers in your life, I encourage you to get them to one of these conferences. There are dates throughout the summer and locations across the country. These conferences have been running for decades, and tens of thousands of Catholics across the United States will tell you their life completely changed when they first encountered Christ at a Steubenville conference. I am one of those people. There's a direct link from the Steubenville conferences in, you know, June of 1997. Actually, I think I went in July to this show right now, to me being here, and the and all the following conferences after that. I genuinely cannot imagine my life without the Steubenville conferences, and not just like the role they've had, but like how I encountered the Lord there, how I encountered others, and through encountering others, I encountered the Lord. Listen, if you're on the fence about this, go. They're great. They're really great. Gomer's going to be speaking at them. Obviously, click the link to learn more about them. All conferences are open for through registration right now. So this is your sign. If you have been waiting for one, if you're in high school, one, why are you listening? But two, go to your parents and say, hey, do something. Have me go to this conference. If you've got teens, take them to this. This is, they are wonderful. So again, all of these Steubenville conferences are happening across the country. They're now open for registration, and Catching Foxes heartily, with all the enthusiasm you can muster. A Luke at his peak in Austria in 2003 type of enthusiasm encourages you to go to the Steubenville conferences. Thank you for the Steubenville conferences. Can't believe that these words are coming out of my mouth, for sponsoring this episode of Catching Foxes. Also, props to me for keeping that clean. You know, I'm pretty proud of myself. That was, you should all be happy with that.
So to me, that's what's exciting, because as the market hits maturity, new things will develop. And I think what you're seeing is this fleshing out, because so here's the counterpoint. So when I went to the roofing conference, the first thing, and all I do is marketing, so like the website development and stuff. So I go in the first class, they offer classes and they were all awesome. And the first one was called SEO for roofing companies. So I go in there and I need to know about search engine optimization and blah, blah, blah. And the guy is going, and it's so funny because you have all of these roofers who are probably 50 and older who run the company, right? And I would say the general tone of the people in that room was they were pissed off they have to deal with any of this crap. They were pissed off that they have to worry about Google and Google Business, and Google AdWords, and pay-per-click, and Facebook. They have to worry about Instagram. Do you think all these like 55-year-old contractors want to worry about Instagram and all that stuff? And you know, to them, in their heads, all of this stuff is the stuff of teenage girls and boys. And then you have the roofers who are savvy, and they go out there like Dimitri Lipinski and Adam Benson, and they're making these videos, and they're rapidly expanding their brand, their reach, their authority. They're able to build whole new companies like Directory with two I's at the end instead of a Y. And it's fascinating how there's like YouTube is creating careers that are the riches are in the niches. So it's very sub-genre-ish. I never stumbled on any of these videos when I was doing woodworking and all that crap. And these are like hardcore. These are contractors talking to other contractors, business to business, using YouTube as the medium. And I found it so fascinating. So what I'm looking forward to is not the day when the priest records the homily, but when, like, what will happen next? Like it's almost like what people talk about a flipped classroom, and you can debate the flipped classroom all day. But the idea is, like, get a subject matter expert, get information out to people, and then class, you can seminar style it. And, like, I don't know what it'll look like in the future when we can do fave-formation and all this stuff, but the fact that if we want, we could hear the Pope right here, right now, every Catholic can, that's awesome. The problem is bishops and priests, but mostly priests are like contractors. They're like the contract. They're like, do I really have to live stream? Do we really have to do this? Do I really have to make a video? But the bishops are like CEOs. They're like afraid that by misspeaking, they'll ruin the brand. They'll cause some lawsuit, right? Like, there's so much weight on their words. But just imagine if you could actually get to know your shepherd. I'm just spitballing here. But get to know your local bishop, your local ordinary, in the same manner that you did in the early church. Like, everyone knew their bishop, and their bishop knew pretty much everyone. Right? And to the fact that we could have something like that, even, like, approximating it with all the new technologies and all the new... You know, I mean, like, the next step right now is personal communication and corporate communication with Zoom. You now have whole industries that are being built, entire companies where no one lives in the same area. Like, I was talking with Matt Warner from Flocknote, and I was talking to him about, like, oh, do you guys have an office? And he goes, my office is at home. None of my employees come to an office. We're all remote. The whole company is remote. And I was like, gosh, that is... And you're leveraging, you know, some guy wants to live in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, because they love, you know, their family, their whatever. As long as they have a good internet connection, they have a career that's thriving. And they might be the only devout Roman Catholic programmer they know. But now they're connected to a whole network. And I think that is going to have interesting repercussions. So the ubiquity leads to new things then being built on top of it, not necessarily those things.
I agree, but I think a lot of that stuff, though, is still pretty, like, not standard, but it's, like, that's not anything new, obviously.
Right.
What I'm wondering is it actually going to be a little bit, like, is it not going to be as robust or as exciting as we think it could be? Hmm. Is it going to be a little bit boring?
Boring is where the money is.
Probably. I mean... No, but, you know, like, so, like, take a look at a thing on, like, Facebook, right?
Yeah.
It's horrible. I don't know why anyone's on there. Instagram, it's just reels of stupidity.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's great. I mean, I send my sister, like, 5 reels a day to both of them. And I'm like, you guys are going to be, like, once I'm better and, you know, back at work, like, what are you going to do? You know? But it's just, like, you know, like, we...
Yeah.
There are some really cool things that are, you know... happy with a lot of stuff, but, like, a lot of the stuff is also just kind of like
meh. Yeah,
like, it's and I don't think it needs to be, like, fun and exciting all the time, but, like, okay, take a look at where we are with streaming. We're just going back to cable. It's just cable through the internet.
Yep
Like, okay. So okay. You know, like, and I just spent 20 minutes today. I was watching stuff on the Pluto app, which is just like turning on the TV and just vegging out for a bit.
What is Pluto? Bar,
it's basically like free TV.
Oh, okay.
Think of it. It's great. It's, I mean, just like, here's like, they'll have like a bunch of TV shows or a bunch of different movies. They have different categories, and there are commercials. It's just like, and it's totally free.
Gotcha.
So I watched Bar Rescue for 20 minutes. And I was like, oh man, yelling at people, it's great.
I love those kind of shows.
I love that show so much.
I used to love Tabitha's Salon Makeover. I like never heard of that show in my life, and I was sitting over at someone's house, I can't remember who it was, and she turned it on, and it was an all-day marathon, And I'm like, this is so fascinating. I like watching every episode. It was so funny.
It's so great. But I don't know. There's part of me that just like, and this could be a little bit of like, you know, like I'm like middle age and things just aren't, they don't seem as exciting as they once were. It could be like a lot of that derp stuff, you know, from South Park, where it's just, the joke is he turns on the radio and everything, all he hears is derp, as opposed to the song. So everything just sounds stupid.
Yeah.
And I think I have a little bit of that going on. Like, I watched this film, supposed to be one of the best films of all time. And I was just like, ugh.
What film?
Children of Men.
Oh, yeah. I didn't like that at all.
I was really excited about it. And I'm just like, this is really dark.
Was that the first movie you saw, or first time you saw it?
Yeah. And I was like, I'm not like, I mean, listen, I think immigration is a very important issue, and I'm probably definitely on a different page than a lot of people are about that. But I'm like, can we just not like have like a paint it all with like a broad brush?
But that's the only brush Americans have.
I know. And I was just kind of like, I don't know. I need to watch it again. I need to, my Apple thing, it already could have expired. But, you know, I'm just kind of like, it just kind of seems boring now.
Yep.
You know, you watch a soccer game, it's hard to distinguish a lot of the games from one and between one and the other. Everything is in 4K. Everything, it all looks the same. It all looks great, but it all looks the same.
How did soccer games look different?
One was just like the colors they would use, because they weren't thinking about what's going to pop on TV. They're thinking about more like what's going to pop when you're there. So that's changed. Like, obviously, as you go from, you have like 720 to then 1080p, then to 4K, that has changed how things look. And what they started to see now is, you basically, from when everything is in HD, it all kind of looks the same. Like, you can't really tell what era this is from.
Mm.
It's going back to the idea of like the ruined future, right?
Yeah.
It all just looks like it's all just meant to flash on TV. So it all just looks the same. And there's this big push now for all these different tournaments, and everything's trying to be hyped up to be a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of like, when everything's special, nothing's special, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know, like, I'm just not really excited about it. I don't know if this is just, if this is like a middle age thing. I don't know if this is just a Luke's been on the couch for 2 weeks, down and out and sick. And but there's just like, I'm just more excited by reading than I am by movies right now. And there are still some movies that I have really loved and enjoyed, but like, you know, I've given up YouTube, which means I've stopped watching a lot of Marvel Theory stuff. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't miss it anymore. I don't really miss it.
That's a film theory.
Yeah. Well, all I would watch would be Screen Crush. The only thing that wasn't insufferable, I thought. So, you know.
So that, I think that it is. A lot. You're becoming a middle-aged man, dude. You're like, oh, everything is dumb, dude.
Yeah,
it is dumb, like, though. See, that's the thing. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. That's the secret of our parents. It really is dumb. They were right. Gosh, it is amazing how smart my parents got once I turned 40.
Yeah, maybe.
So while you were talking, I drew a picture of you.
Look terrible. I look like a monster. But thank you.
That's because I don't know how to draw.
No, this is great. I mean, I look like a freak.
Hey, no, freaky good. Deekies need love too. Freaky deekies.
That's
need
true.
Love too. Yeah. So can I
even divorced ones?
Oh, don't do that. Can I just talk about something? And you don't even have to say anything back. Can I just talk about something?
Am I joking about it too much?
No. I haven't really brought it up yet.
No, I'm nervous.
Luke, I'm obsessed with roofing. Luke.
I know. Luke. I know you are, buddy. Luke, I know. Luke, I know.
I'm I know. Obsessed.
I know.
I have read no less than 9 books in the last month on roofing, on contractors, on SEO for roofing websites, for marketing roofing, for sales. I have, Luke, I am in love. I bought this.
What is that?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Luke. You put your iPhone on it, and then you spin it around. Oh, it's not. Hey, you spin it around. It's a gimbal for your phone. And what it does is it enables you
to... the microphone.
Yeah, yeah. Whoopsie. What it does is it enables you to walk around with your phone and record, oh, I don't know, a bunch of roofers roofing.
Oh, thank God.
Yes, so that...
bunch of burly men doing some work on a roof.
And it's incredible. Ooh, let's get that in landscape mode. Oh,
so basically, it's a so for people who can't see because this is a podcast.
Oh, that's a good point.
He's holding a thing in his hands, and it turns his phone from landscape to what's it called when it's
portrait
when it's upright? So, that's right, portrait mode.
No, it's a gimbal. It's a three-axis stabilized system.
I'm sorry.
So as you walk, it doesn't jiggle jaggle, and you can do all sorts of cool stuff. And you can put it down, and it can track your face. So you can track a person while you're walking, and they're walking another direction. Or
are you going to fall off off of a roof?
No, I'm probably never going to go on a roof. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
no.
Don't. Yeah. Like you tempted fate with when you got into woodworking and almost like cut your face off. You remember that? You remember that?
The goggles. I didn't know the straps were so long, and they almost caught.
I know.
I just went, oh, and I froze.
Because here's the thing. My good man, who I love. I love you tremendously. You were aware of that, right? Like, tremendously.
I think
so. You are a brother. Like, I would lay down all my life for you in a heartbeat. I will your good, deeply.
Okay. You will my motherhood.
You have ADHD. You're not the clumsiest person in the world.
I wouldn't say I'm clumsy.
But ADHD does, like, make people prone to clumsy-ish mistakes. And you, when you're zoned in, this is I'm the same way, will, like, ignore everything else that is, like, around you, right? Because you're zoned in on a thing. So if you're on a roof with a camera because you're very excited,
you are going to fall. Gimbal is still stable. Yeah,
exactly. You are going to severely hurt yourself.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here to bury Michael Gormley.
He died as he lived.
He died.
Creating content.
Creating content. He did say, as I administered last rites to him, did you see the footage yet of when I fell? It's gone viral, but man, that video was stabilized with my now broken gimbal.
What are the numbers? What are the numbers?
Yeah. How many likes? How many likes?
Did Luke buy the insurance?
But no, so can I just, you know.
So, you know, so just.
I'll be careful.
Thank you. Listen, as someone whose income is dependent upon you.
Yikes. Okay. We got this. We got this.
Yeah.
No, but I want to say these are the changes that I've noticed in me that I love. Okay. 100% honest. Part of losing weight and getting in shape is the idea of, like, you have to be in shape in order to be a roofer and to work. Like, even if I'm just doing marketing, I'm showing up at the work site. I'm going to be doing some of the work, right? Maybe not nailing and stuff. But you're hauling stuff around. These are huge bags of shingles on the ground and doing all this stuff. So and there's a culture of getting in shape, getting like that is a part of the roofing industry. Like there are people who will attack you, shame and humiliate you if you're not in shape. So there's that. But there's this other stuff about like human agency. And what I mean by that is, like, so a big thing with the people that I kind of follow in this space, because it's about growing a business and building a business. It's like, you got to build trust. You got to go out there. You're the one that has to put yourself out there. And I've watched tons of these sale videos and even the creepy cult-like sales training videos. Those can get really weird. But like, they're all like, manifest. It's the law of attraction. And you're like, oh, gosh. But like, at its core, there are, I remember one day I woke up. And it was the last day of this push that we were doing for some stuff. And this one fellow was like, oh, I don't know. Like, I'm not really good at this. So I wrote a prayer. And then it was just a standard, like, morning prayer that we to go to work. And it's an ordinary thing. And then underneath it, I wrote, listen, if we don't get out there, today there will be a family who has a problem with their roof. Maybe it's old. Maybe it's damaged in a hailstorm. And some scammer if we're not doing our job and getting our voice out there and our name out there and our product out there, some scammer is going to damage someone's roof. Their families are protected by this roof. Their life is bound up with the health of all the crap that they don't want to think about. We want to think about roofs, so no human has to think about their damn roof until they need it repaired or replaced, right? And so I have a friend who lives 10 minutes from me. I love this family. I love this family. My daughter's friends with this family. I love the just the best couple. They bought an old, they bought farmland, not farmland, but a big land, a big plot of land. It's had an old beat up house and they were turning it into something really cool. And in fact, after every paternal feast day party, which is right, it's at a wedding venue, we go to their house for like an after party and it's so fun. And you stay there till 3, 4, 5 in the morning. But they have been ripped off by shady contractors. So many times. One guy just left the door open and raccoons came in and destroyed their furniture, shredded everything.
Oh my gosh.
They had a pipe burst and the water came in and it damaged stuff. They had all this work done and their house, their downstairs looks beautiful. I didn't go upstairs. They did the upstairs stuff. It's like a carport and it goes and the other half of the house is over the carport. I didn't see any of that. But my wife was telling me, she's like, they did. It looks so great. Well, corners were cut. And corners were cut with their sewage, and all of this sewage backed up and out through the toilet. Like, tons of sewage coming out through the toilet. Raw, untreated sewage spilling all over their house, like ankle deep from what I heard.
What do you do?
So what happened was, this guy did not build, the plumber did not build it correctly. And then they were supposed to build another septic tank, because it's so far away from the regular house septic tank, because they were adding a bathroom and adding stuff, mm-hmm. but it's like far away on the other side of the house. And so apparently building code is, no, you have to build you can build a smaller tank, but you have to build a septic tank for that rather than run these incredibly long lines. Well, he didn't run them at a downgrade. It wasn't downsloped. So the stuff just sat there and then it backed up. And it was, and all the gases and all that stuff. And it said their whole house was unlivable because of all of this. And it was horrific. And I think like, they lost like tens of thousands of dollars by two or three different contractors that just treated them like crap. And so when I think about this stuff, this is the shift in my brain that happened, is like, good contractors are few and far between, and we need to do our best getting our name out there and hiring quality people, because mm-hmm. there are scammers who can't wait to take your $12,000 deposit so that they can go and buy $8,000 materials. And they buy $4,000 of materials, pocket the rest, and put in crap in your house. So in this case, literally crap. And I started like getting like defensive about people, right? Like, this is unacceptable in America that we have. And then this is what I found out, that American private equity firms are buying roofing companies and HVAC mm-hmm. companies by the thousands. Because that stuff won't be gobbled up by AI. Yeah. So now it's tying it back to what our earlier conversation. And so they are buying all of this stuff, but guess what they do? They buy them. They commoditize it as much as possible. They slash prices. They cut corners. And the owner, gets kind of tossed out. And then a year later, their reputation is destroyed. And they're like, we'll hire you back and you fix everything. And it's like, yeah, and you're going to pay me 10 times what I was making. They're like, yeah, sure, whatever. You'll save us money in the long run. Like, it's crazy what they're doing. So you got these mom and pop stores that are just being gobbled up, and you have these nationwide, it's not like they're a nationwide roofing company, like Shamrock Roofing. That's a nationwide roofing company. Okay, whatever. They did such a good job, they've expanded. They are private equity firms that are just acquiring this stuff, putting it in a portfolio, managing it poorly to make money, and hopefully to pump and dump and do different things that these companies do. And I'm like, man, this is it. This is the Armageddon. This is late stage capitalism, when they're so afraid of their artificial intelligence consuming everything that they're buying the last industries of durable trades and they're running them into the ground to make a short term buck. Because everything that I know about roofing contractors is, if you sacrifice the long term for the short term, you'll be out of business in 2 years. 80% of roofing companies are out of business in 2 years because they live for the short term. And it's like, the thing that's most important, one of the most powerful marketing things you could say is, we've been in business for 5 years. That means we're the most trustworthy roofing company in your area.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
And I really get fired up about this stuff because it's like, you know, even though we might not be the cheapest, I don't want to be the cheapest. I never want to be the cheapest because you know what cheapest means is somewhere someone's cutting a corner. And you know what freaking happens? And this really, really freaking pisses me off. Right? We live in Texas.
Get it, Cormley.
Yeah. 99% of all subcontractors are Mexicans, right? Mm-hmm. They're not Hondurans. They're not Venezuelans. They are Mexicans. They are Mexican immigrants. Many of them are illegal immigrants. And here's the deal. If you're an illegal immigrant, you are on a very narrow precipice. If you're a hardworking illegal immigrant who wants to earn their piece of the American pie by working hard and doing their thing, and you have some contractor that picks you up at Home Depot, right? That's the whole standard thing. 5 a.m., 6 a.m., 7 a.m., you roll up, you get a bunch of guys in your truck, and you go off to the work site, and you got guys who put in 10 hours of labor in the Texas summer on a roof, and then he freaking drives away, and he doesn't pay him. Right? Now, there are four sins in the Bible.
Cheesy Pete.
Yeah, yeah. So I was watching Cardinal McElroy be interviewed by the journalist at America Magazine one time. I can't stand Cardinal McElroy. He's a guy, he's a very weird guy. Like, he's like hyper pro Francis, but then he goes way, I mean, he says things that Pope Francis has condemned tons of times. But he's just an interesting fella. And one of the things he does is he constantly demonizes certain people that he doesn't like. And he made this comment. He goes, you know, here's the deal. If we only talk about abortion and euthanasia, and we never talk about immigration and the rights of the laborer, he's like, you know, show me a traditionalist that gives a damn about the rights of the laborer. He's like, no one does. You're not going to find anyone talking about this stuff. And I'm like, well, actually, well, every distributist, every wannabe Chestertonian distributist is all about that crap.
I'm like, have you been on Catholic Twitter? Good sir.
But then in a lot of traditionalist like prayer books, like the old school ones, they have like ways of living the Catholic life or something like that in the beginning. And it'll have like the Ten Commandments and the Eight Beatitudes and the five laws of the church and different things like that. Well, they also break down sins. So you'll have like the cardinal sins, you know, the seven deadly sins. But there are also different things. And one of them is called the four sins that cry out to God for vengeance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which when I first read that, I was like, damn. And you know where I first read that was in the Compendium of Catholic Theology or Catholic Social Teaching, which is one of my favorite books, a great book, came out during, I believe, during JP2 or Benedict. And the four sins, I can't remember the fourth one. It's escaping me. But the first one is murder because Abel's blood cries out to God for vengeance. The second one is the sin of Sodom, that the outcry is so great it demanded God's vengeance. But the third one is depriving the laborer of his wages.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think, even for a moment. Oh, I think the next one, I think it's hurting widows and orphans or whatever hurting is.
Yeah, yeah.
I think of like, you know, these people. So I know a guy, I know a woman who married an illegal immigrant. She works at a local church, super faithful, gets paid pennies. But whatever, she's the breadwinner because, and he's a day laborer. He works wherever he can. He needed a car, goes to a car dealership. They say, listen, you know, obviously you can't sign any paperwork. She has terrible credit. She's already, you know, paying for a car. So what we're going to do is you're going to pay us in cash and we're going to keep this off the books so the government doesn't paper trail you. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. This will save our lives. I can have a livelihood now. So every month they pay like $400 a month for a car that they should be paying $250 a month for, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're almost about to own it, right? It's one of those, you know, you pay to own. They're almost about to own it. They paid like $5,000 and it's like $5,500. So before, literally like 2 days before the last payment comes due, they send a repo man to repossess the car. They repossess the car. So they go to that and they're like, what happened? Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, I have no written record. You stole my thing. Do you want me to call the cops on you for stealing my car? I have no written record. So now they're able to do this again. And again.
Yeah.
And again.
Cheesy Pete.
Right. So this is the part where it infuriates me. Like, as a contractor, we have our subcontractors that we work with. We have a group of guys, and we know the foreman, and we pay them the wage that they deserve. In the contracting industry, a lot of contract owners, roofing company owners, will, like, let's say you have a salesman who makes 30% margin. So he sells a $10,000 roof. He gets $3,000. Let's say he sells 10 $30,000 roofs, which is not uncommon here in the Woodlands, $24,000 to $30,000. Well, the owner doesn't want to pay that, so he fires his number one salesman that month, so he doesn't pay him the next month, and he just keeps all the money. This happens so often, so often. It's mostly because the companies run poorly, and now they were like, oh gosh, I need that money. I'm going to fire him. And so they do these things, and you're like, even the people who aren't vulnerable as an illegal immigrant in the country where one phone call to the police, you're gone. But like, you just see this evilness, and it pisses me off. And so I feel like I'm working for the side of the Lord, working for this. And I would love to make that cash money paper doing good things in the world. I'm excited about this. Can you tell?
I am. Yeah, I'm very excited about that. I'm excited. I'm excited for you.
Yeah. And yeah, I wrote the latest Facebook post I put for Petrus Roofing and Solar. It says, you work too damn hard to have some bad contractor ruin your home. It's like, click here. That's how pissed off I've been all morning. I've just been stewing. <Ugh. laughs>
I am Gomer, God's vengeance.
The sin cries out for vengeance to the Lord, and that's me.
Swear to me.
Man alive. So I'm living my best life. I have such an appreciation now for contractors who do good work. Don't ever be a homeowner, people. Listen to me. Don't ever own a home. It's the worst. It's an endless money pit of death and destruction. You know what I have to do now, Luke? Mm-hmm. I have to get an entirely new inside and out HVAC system. Entirely new. I feel like an adult because I just replaced the water heater. I feel like an adult. It didn't break first. Before, you know, we didn't have catastrophic failure with water everywhere. And then I said, maybe I should do something about that. So we got a guy, the guy I trust, the guy installed it correctly. There was gaps in our roof. And he goes, oh, no, I can see daylight. Do you know a roofer? And I was like, hell yeah, I do, baby. So we got that fixed. But now I need a whole HVAC system, a whole new one. I need, and the ductwork, like just walking in my house, this side of the house is hot. And my bedroom is literally 15 degrees colder. It's 47 degrees outside. It feels like it's 47 degrees in my bedroom. And it feels like it's, I don't even know, 70 in the rest of the house, like literally on the other side of the door. So. There's like, it's all, oh man, it's so bad.
Adulthood is the best until it's the worst.
I listen to this awesome contractor podcast. I listen to, there's a guy named Jamie Clark.
If you're still listening, thank you. Somehow, if you're listening to this episode, thank you.
Okay, I'll stop talking. Oh, you're right. You're right.
No. Sorry.
This guy designed a custom house, 9,000 square feet, and the guy pays $150 a month in electricity costs. For HVAC.
Oh.
Because he built the house around the HVAC system. So he seals the house to keep it as tight as possible, brings in fresh air, all that stuff. It's a mansion, a 9,000 square foot house sealed tightly with a heat pump, air conditioning, and heating. And that's it. It's incredible. And it's like, this could happen to anyone. My stupid house built in 1998 has so many holes and leaks in it. So I have one company that's going to come out. They're going to look at my attic and they're going to seal everything. And then I have to remove my HVAC within a week because my HVAC is a gas furnace and it'll poison my kids. So then I need to put in a whole new HVAC system.
So what you're saying, this is a bad time for me to bring up that I need all the Patreon money this month. I'm just kidding. I mean, not really, but also yes.
Luke, if you need all the Patreon money,
please
take it.
No.
I'll be good because I'm not replacing it yet. I got
not anymore. Now I'm feeling bad.
No, that's why I went for the roofing company to make this money. After you offered. Yeah, I did offer. No, I definitely offered that.
Vengeance!
Who knew being a prophet of the Lord would cost me so dearly? All the prophets of the Lord knew that. I'm just trying to make millions, gosh. Son. I'm just trying to make
millions. I mean, like, man, I love us. I really do. I'm sorry, man. It's tough. Like,
it's not tough. It's beautiful. I get to do this. I get that's to
true.
Help
that's true.
Immigrants. I get to
oh,
help.
Oh no, that's amazing. No. That's stuff. I was saying like your home stuff. That's always, you know.
Yeah. Well, once I sell some solar, then maybe I'll be able to pay for it.
But that is really true though. Like when you really do believe in what you are doing and when you have a brand that you think, hey, no, we want to actually do something good and this is how we want to do that. Like the thing that was hammered over and over again in both my marketing course at the school that I attend, you've heard of it. I believe it's called the University of Notre Dame, God Country and Notre Dame. Perhaps you've heard of that before.
Oh yeah, I have. Yeah. Go on, please.
And all the branding agencies that I have worked with, it's been continually stressed that your brand, you have to actually like, when you say we believe this, or we want to do things like this, you have to actually do that.
Yeah.
And that's what builds your brand equity. It's like, this is, you know, we want to deliver this type of value that you can't fake that. And it actually is pretty exciting when you're like, no, we want to help people. We believe this really helps people. Like that stuff shouldn't be unlimited to the nonprofit space or to the social sector,
right?
Or to working for the church or, you know, or something. It should be in everything that you were doing. Like, no, this is really good.
Yeah.
You know, like when I worked at Dorothy Lane Market, they really did emphasize like this should be a pleasant place. And this is a place where I worked at in college and in high school. And their whole strategy was they just wanted to hire really nice people. Mm-hmm. Everyone there was really nice. And they want it to be a nice, pleasant experience. I talked about that all the time.
Turns out when you hire nice people, it's a nice environment.
Yeah. And so, I mean, of course, it was also very high end. We had to be very douchey, and I loved every second of it. But, you know, you just like that was hammered over. And that was, I don't know. I've always like thought about that, about how like we were kind of, it was ingrained in our brains to do it, to be the absolute best that you could be to like you know, so our slogan was a store that accommodated, and it was actually like, and I got into an argument with like the not like a VP there, but I forget what he was, because I did this thing and he was like, why did you let them park? Oh, they like parked their car died. And I like drove them back to their apartment, back to their hotel. There were these like ballet dancers. They're in town for,
you're like, okay, madam, ballet. I will take you back. No, was, my Russian it was, friend
it was just funny. Very like hip young people who were in clearly great shape and had very cool outfits were like, our car's dead and we don't know like where to go. And I was like, oh, here, I will drive you there. And I was just like the night, I was in charge of the store at night. I wasn't even the manager. I was just in charge of like the front end part of the store. And I remember this guy named Wayne, who was in charge of our like the store as a whole, was like, why is there, I don't know, I mean, they should have gotten their car way earlier than they did. And I was just like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And I didn't like back down at all off of that. And they were like, and I was like told, no, you were right. Like, this is like, we're the store that bends over backwards for people. Cause that's what we do.
Yeah.
And even like when you kind of hold your ground like that, it's pretty cool. Like actually it gives your work a little bit more, there's a nobility to it in the best way possible.
Yeah. And that's what I think of with all this stuff. Like, in the midst of the lying liars in the contracting space, there's a nobility to the work. Like I'm working on someone's home, right? I'm making sure their attic doesn't have mold in it so their kids can be healthy. Like, you know, I feel like that scene in Good Will Hunting where he's talking about laying brick, you know, he's like, well, laying brick, that's building homes. Just someone's family's in there. That's respectable. And he's like, it is respectable. Like I think about this stuff. I think about this stuff a lot. And especially in light of Catholic social teaching, because it is so, it's a durable trade. People will always need roofs. People will always need windows. People will always need doors. So sell them the best roof, the best door, the best window that they can afford, and don't be shoddy or shady about installation. And then everything works itself out. But the moment you add shoddiness and shadiness, all of a sudden people are iffy to call someone to help them. And so what do? Then the problem gets worse. Until now, it's a $7,000 problem when it could have been a $1,000 problem. It just makes me mad.
There's this quote that we had in the grocery store that I really love. It is by Henry Voice, and it is, whatever is rightly done, however humble, is noble.
Ooh, I like that.
Whatever is rightly done, however humble, is noble. And I've always loved that.
I was talking with the guy
in my brain.
Talking with a guy who works at Porsche, and he was telling me about when Porsche partnered with Disney World, and he was walking at Disney World with like the CEO of Disney World, whoever that was. And they're, you know, wearing very expensive suits, and they're walking through, what is it called? Main Street. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And there was a piece of trash on the ground. He's like, the guy was talking about all this stuff and blah, 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 and seamlessly just walked up and picked up the trash. It was like a wrapper, and put it in his pocket of his very expensive suit and just kept walking. And he said, I didn't hear a single thing that guy said after that. All I was thinking was, these people really believe in the mission of Disney World because the CEO just picked up trash mm-hmm. and put it in his pocket. Like, what CEO does it? And he said, everyone acts like an owner. This is my home. This is my space. This is my place. I'm going to take care of it. And it's like, when I think about Petrus and I think about solar and roofing, those are two places where people get ripped off. But I'm like, no, we can actually build something remarkable here. That one day, and this is what I said talking with some people yesterday, like, one day I want Noah, like, I don't have any of these skills of the actual work. I want to be able to have my son Noah to, like, hey, do you want to do this for a living? You know, Thomas, Kateri, Cecilia, like, is this something that could legitimately be handed on? That's something like that affects the community. Cool. That's generational. Yeah. And that's beautiful. Anyway, that's all I got. I have so much zeal.
That's awesome, dude.
I'm filled with zeal. I love that.
Yeah. I love that.
Get some piss and vinegar in me. Got a little piss and vinegar. Hey, Rocky, I didn't hear no bell.
So the kids did not like Rocky? Half and half?
Yeah, I would say half and half.
Yeah. Half those films half. In the 70s, they're intentionally slow.
Yeah.
So for in modern audience, that can be kind of hard.
Yeah. And, you know, the kissing scene was a bit rough. You know, you're like, my one daughter just got up and left. And I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, there's some Me Too movement stuff that definitely has some clear. The woman definitely said three times, I want to leave. I don't belong here. Let me go. He did lock the door. Yeah. And I said that to Van Vickle this morning. We recorded Every Knee Shall Bow. I was just like, he goes, yeah, you know, and the kissing scene is a bit, you know, it'll get you. And I was like, yeah, man, that's one of those things where, like, sometimes you watch
that part.
Yeah. You watch it. You watch these movies and you're just like, oh, oh no. Oh no. What are they doing? Oh no. I feel so uncomfortable. You know, and he mentioned, he's like, yeah, we just watched The Quiet Man the other day with John Wayne. And there's a part where he like dragged a woman back or something like that. And you're like, oh. Okay. Or like in that Shirley Temple movie where a guy puts her mother over his knee and starts spanking the adult woman in front of the girl, and then the girl and Shirley Temple's like, you're doing it because you love her, right? And he's like, exactly. Like, I don't like this at all.
Well, I mean, like, if you take a look at Animal House, three-fourths of what John Belushi does now, it's like,
I haven't seen that movie in 1,000 years.
So I mean, he's basically just like, I mean, it's severely perverted, like, yeah, what he's doing. And just, it's like, oh, that's illegal. That's illegal. That's really wrong.
I remember there was
canceled for less.
There was some movie on USA Up All Night. You remember that? USA Up All Night, right? Yeah. Where they would show our movies with slight edits on you know, whatever, like Porky's and stuff like that. And there was some show, and I don't remember what the name of the show, I know nothing about except this one scene, and this scene has stuck in my head because of Bill Cosby. And there, it's like, I don't know if it's like a frat boy thing or like a club or something, but the guy's like, and here's our secret tool for working with the ladies, and they hold up a box and they open it up and it says Spanish Fly. Do you know what Spanish Fly is?
I do not.
It's basically Rufinol.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so Spanish Fly what you put in women's drinks to make them woozy and not make good decisions. Right? That's what's
horrible.
And it's just like, yeah, it'll make a, you know, this is the, and you're like, oh, what the hell? How is this a part of our culture and world? Oh man.
See, and that's where, like, sometimes I'm like, maybe the Me Too movement, a little bit of stuff that we can be like, I wasn't trying to say it was all negative.
Yeah, Luke, why are you minimizing their pain and their voices? I don't know. You should be canceled. I'm going to take all the Patreon money. Thank you. Oh, crap. Yep. It all goes to you. Shit. I need to figure out how our money works. I'm still paying for the damn internet bill. Ah!
Wait, what internet bill are you paying for?
The hosting for Fireside.
Okay, we need to fix that.
9 years later. Goodbye, Luke. Thank you, Franciscan University Conference Office. You're beautiful people.
Oh yeah, thank you guys. Thank you for sponsoring, Joe. Thank you for putting in this into the show. Thank you to Luke. Thank you for being you, Gomer. Thank you for being you.
Hey, I started to talk to someone about ADHD in a medical profession.
Oh, how was that?
It was good. I said, hey, I need to get tested for adult ADHD. What do I do? And he said, oh, yeah, we can help. We are affiliated with Dr. Brown, the MD with ADHD. That's like her moniker. Cool. And he said, but if you want to start in a holistic way, get this. And he sent me some things. He's like, often we tell people for a month or 2 months, try this, see how it works on your brain.
What they try you?
88.5. Oh my gosh. What they try you, boy? 88.5 milligrams of saffron. Right? And so they're like, it helps with mood, blah, blah, blah. If it doesn't do anything for you, then you need to go. And he's like, so in the interim, take this, take the tests, get your understanding, meet with the doctor, yeah, get your baseline physical and all that stuff. And I'm like, okay, here we go.
Cool.
Here and we away go. We go.
And here we go.
That's it. All right. Adios, bud.
I love it. Bye, everyone.